what this paper is about. This is like this became part one of an unfinished paper. But like Ali said, I like to think of myself as a political theologian because I make analogies between politics as it is understood today or in the contemporary era, and religion, and in my case, especially the Christian tradition. And I like making those analogies, and they're easy to make. And it passes the time. And one of these things that I've found, one of these analogies that I've made, I realized when I gradually, when I've taught political theory for my students here, I've done that for nearly 10 years now. And I don't know if they've picked up things, but I've learned a lot over that period of time. And one of the things that I learned, or one of the places that I arrived at, was and is anarchism. And my purpose is, in the first part of this paper, to document that arrival in the way that I can make it explicit. And just a few words as per context. Firstly, I'm a Schmittian political theologian. I subscribe, by and large, to his argument about the secularization of theological concepts. I've been influenced by his thought on the political, and I can't seem to get rid of that man. And what I do in this first part of the paper is contextualize the argument by looking at some of the work done under political theology recently, namely Hermann Mayer and his distinction between political philosophy and political theology. I find this interesting. He's a Schmittian too, I suppose, and he describes the distinction between political theology and political philosophy as follows. Both forms of political thought, philosophy, just as theology, are based on faith. They presuppose the answer to the question of the proper life in unquestioning trust, be it in the correctness of natural inclination, be it in the validity of traditional valuations adopted from others. And this and Mayer's work on this is kind of important to what I'm doing, because I'm taking it as a premise, which in colloquial thought is not very prevalent, but both political philosophy in the secular sense and political theology in any sense you want to take it, they are mental activities, i.e. placing trust in something, but in any case, they are based on faith. We accept things on faith and act accordingly. Secular political thought doesn't like this, and I've bumped on this when I've taught my political theory course, but because one of the first spiels that I do when I begin the tutorial is I ask two questions. One, why does the state exist? And two, why do we have to obey it? Why do we have to be obedient to that state? And the first question often, you know, begins thinking in terms of, okay, this is a nation, we speak the same language, we eat pretty much the same food, and we live around here, so that's why there has to be a state. But that's a fallacy, surely. I mean, we can live here and talk the same language without the institution of state somehow making that possible. Yeah? Okay. And and no one has ever seen a state, no one has ever touched it, so I think it's very clear to me that it is something that we merely believe in, or in some cases don't really believe in that, but just play along as if it existed. Okay. From Schmidt, he wrote a book, short. His books are often very, very short, but he wrote a book on Hobbes's Leviathan, and this Hobbes's Leviathan will be the nub of what I'm about to say here. Schmidt emphasizes the interplay, the necessity of protection and obedience in underlying the concept or the idea of the state. And protection and obedience, they're both like alpha and omega, what have you. Okay, and then Hobbes, the social contract, and the Leviathan. When we go to the question number two with my students, why do we have to obey the state? We end up, every time I remember, we end up with the fable of the social contract. And it goes like this. Okay, first we were just in the woods and we didn't have trousers or anything, and we killed each other. And that wasn't cool. And then we kind of we got together and conceived something higher above us, and that thing protects us, and that's why we have to obey it. It's like a deal, but when you look at it and think about it for a while, you realize that it is actually an appeal to fear. You're afraid of your life, so that's why you obey. Okay, that's an important lesson that I always try to say. Oh yeah, and then I like to come up with smart-sounding ideas, and what I call the ontopolitical set is something. When I got this answer enough years in a row, I began to think about it, and I wanted to deconstruct it. And during that time period, I was reading what is known as reformed epistemology, especially Alvin Plantinga and discussion on the logical problem of evil, one of the perennial theological questions. And I was inspired by Plantinga's way of coming up with a set of propositions that buttress the theistic view of the world. And I kind of played with it and came up with the ontopolitical set, which is a set of five propositions about the world political today. And to make sense as an argument, to be a rational argument, all of those premises must hold. We must, i.e., we must believe in those premises in a properly basic way. But if we can't, if we believe in four but don't believe the fifth one, then the whole set will collapse. I will show you how. And now I'll go through this and say something if I have time. And I want ideas. What do I do with this? I don't know yet. But if you have anything, I'd love to hear it. Firstly, I take this to be self-evident. There's evil in the world. Any thinking person will admit this, and if come and talk with me if you don't. But there's evil in the world, there's no denying that. Okay. Two, states exist in the world. We can deny this. I can say that, okay, now I'm done. I'm no longer a Finn. Your rules don't apply, but that won't happen, if it happens, I'll be in trouble. But there is an institution, a social construction, highly reified social construction called the state, and we just have to come to terms. I mean, this is what we're doing here. We're coming to terms with the state, yeah? Okay. Three, there is a tendency with these states to identify certain pieces of land and the people on somehow associated with that piece of land as citizens, okay? We have citizenship. If someone doesn't have a citizenship, they are an exception to the rule, okay? Fourthly, and now we get to Schmitt, the most important function of states is to protect its citizens from the world's evil. That is the fable of the social contract. State of nature is violent, brute, short. You've all read that, and the fact that we conceived the Leviathan for the purpose of protecting us human beings. We came up with the mortal God. And okay, that's four is the state's end of the bargain. Yeah, five. Our duty is to support that most important function of the state, i.e. protection, by relating to it in a manner of obedience. And this, to me, I mean, this, I understood something when I put it into smaller pieces. And why do you have to believe all of these and not just a few? Okay, if you don't believe in one, then you don't need the state. If there is no evil in the world, then the existence of state is pointless, irrational. There is no reason to have them. If we lived in a world where there is only good things and nothing bad ever happens. If you deny that states exist in the world, you probably are not feeling well, because it is so reified and we've been grown to accept that. Citizenship is also an institution that is difficult to deny that something like that exists. Okay, now four and five are the crucial ones in this fable. I'm being offered this by thinking young, talented students, and this makes sense. But what if the state doesn't protect me from the world's evil? What if the state is the one that is causing me evil? I mean, if we can't accept four, the whole set collapses, and it doesn't make sense anymore. And if for some reason, which I'm grappling, I mean, what could it be like? Probably what it is. In many ways, in many countries, is that the states demand or always demand a certain degree of obedience. There's a wide variety within, but there, if they didn't, I can't see how the institution of the state would continue to exist. I mean, all right. We can talk these. These are not conclusive as of yet, and then. Then I realized something, and I used my extensive expertise in math by coming up with the following formula. Okay, it's in the next slide. Let's read this one first. What I make of the set and the four and five, which I think are the most easily contestable, if the states abandon the duty to protect their citizens from the world's evil, then it doesn't make any rational sense to support that state by being obedient. And the formula is here. If protection, this is silly because these would have to be quantifiable things, which they are not. But if, let's think about that, okay, evil could be measured in terms of evil. This is Plantinga's idea. Okay, if there are five terps of evil threatening Jan, and state protects, Finland is very good at that, it protects all those terps and with room to spare, you're good, okay, you're fine. Both are holding on to the contract. But I, with my limited experience of the world and politics, this is not, this is an exception, or seems like one. And okay, this is how I came to understand what anarchism is about, and somehow to pigeonhole it in my personal system. But I don't know what to do with it. Any ideas are warmly welcome. Thank you so much.